You're listening to the Humans of DevOps podcast, a podcast focused on advancing the humans of DevOps through skills, knowledge, ideas, and learning, or the SKIL framework. Here's your host, DevOps Institute CEO, Jane Grohl.
Hi, everyone. It's Jane Grohl, CEO of the DevOps Institute, and welcome to another episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm excited today to have Charity Majors of Honeycomb.io with me, and we're going to talk a lot about observability. Hey, Charity.
Hi. Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
Thank you for joining us. So, Charity, why don't you tell us a little bit about your background? I know you coined observability. So, as part of that, why don't you tell us kind of, you know, your thought process in terms of the origins?
Yeah, totally. I am a dropout music major from Idaho who hadn't touched a computer until I went to college. And, you know, I've made my niche as an engineer sort of as in operations. I'm an ops engineer. My niche has always been I'd like to join startups when they're early and young, and I help them grow up, right? They have a product, but it's not really production ready. And so I like firefighting. I have ADHD. I really enjoy, I'm kind of an adrenaline junkie. So, you know, I've done that a few times over the course of my career. Most recently, before Honeycomb, I did this for a company called Parse, which was a mobile backend as a service, kind of like Heroku for mobile. We were later acquired by Facebook. It was a real roller coaster. We were using, you know, some technologies that were probably the right decision when we made them, but we quickly outgrew them and they became real liabilities. But the core problem that I was wrestling with, you know, around the time we got acquired was I was coming to the horrified conclusion that we had built a system doing all the quote unquote right things, some of the smartest engineers in the world, and it was basically undebuggable. It just wasn't even possible. If we had seen a problem before, then we could recognize it quickly the next time. But the nature of this beast was that almost every time the pager went off, it was something different, something we'd never encountered before. And, you know, with logs, you can find the log line if you know what you're looking for and if you happen to admit it. With metrics, it can tell you the overall shape of, you know, is it healthy? Are there spikes of errors, whatever? But you can't drill down and see which events have errors or what else they have in common with other errors, you know. And we tried shipping some homebrew stuff. We tried all of these things. After we got acquired by Facebook, we started trying some of the internal Facebook tools. We eventually tried this tool called Scuba, which was this butt ugly, aggressively hostile to users tool. But it did one thing really well, which is it let us slice and dice in near real time on dimensions of high cardinality. So, you know, if we have a million app IDs, right, million applications, any one of them could hit the iTunes store and just go nuts at any time. So using Scuba, we were able to go, oh, there's a spike of errors. Let's break down by one in a million app. Let's break down by app IDs, see which ones have the most errors. Okay, this one has the most errors, and those errors started there. So why, you know? And then you can start looking at, well, are all of the endpoints erroring, or is it just some of them? Maybe it's just the right endpoints. So that tells you something. So you start, you're like, okay, so is it all of the right endpoints that are erroring? Is it all of the queries that are writes that are erroring, or is it just some of them? Maybe it's just the ones that are going to a particular shard or a particular AZ, or maybe it's a particular query type that is associated with a change in the client library that just got shipped. Or, you know, it could be anything. The point is the vast number of things that could go wrong. And then there are the sets of problems where it's like, you know, we're using a shared pool of API workers, a shared pool of, you know, push notification servers, and we're using shared databases. So, you know, the spike of errors that, you know, maybe all of the apps are erroring. Which one caused it? Which one caused it to get slow for everyone? You know, like these are the problems we were wrestling with. And when we got stuff into Scuba, then we the time for us to answer these questions and find the answer dropped like a rock. From this very open-ended, God, we're just going to start looking and God knows how long it'll take, right? To seconds, not even minutes. And it wasn't even an engineering problem anymore. It became a support problem. You just go click, 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 oh, there it is every time. So this made a big impression on me, of course, but I'm an ops. As soon as it was fixed, I was like, on to the next thing. I didn't really stop to think too much at the time about what exactly was it that was enabled us to do just like orders of magnitude better at debugging these systems. Until I was leaving Facebook, and I was planning to go be an engineering manager at Slack or Stripe. And I suddenly went, oh shit, I don't know how to engineer anymore without this stuff that we've built, because it had become so core to how I perceive my my systems. It's like my five senses. It's like, I'm aware of it every day. It's how I decide what to build. It's how I know that what I shipped is working. It's how, you know, all of these, it's like seeing the world in HD, right? Instead of like having a bandana over your eyes and just like whacking at the pinata and hoping you're in the right direction, which is what so much of systems debugging feels like, right? And instead, if you can just see and just look, and it's transformational. You know, I had never planned to start a company, but clearly this needed to be done. So we did it. And over the course of the first year, like, you know, we had to write a storage engine from scratch, query planner from scratch, all this stuff. That wasn't nearly as difficult as trying to figure out how to talk about it, right? Like, it was very clear to me from the start we were not building a monitoring tool, because monitoring is very, you know, it's thresholds and it's after the fact, and it's, you know, is the system roughly good enough, right? Metrics are the perfect tool. Dashboards are the perfect tool for that. And it was, I think, halfway through the first year that I was just so frustrated. I was like staying up for days at a time. I couldn't sleep. I was like, how the hell do I talk about this? Every term in data is so overloaded. And that's when I happened to Google observability. I had heard the term in college, and Twitter had a team called observability at one point. And when I looked up the definition, it has this really beautiful heritage. It comes from mechanical engineering. It comes from control theory, in which observability is the mathematical dual of controllability. And it means, how much can you understand the inner workings of this system just by observing it from the outside? Right? And that's when, like, I had brain explosions. I was like, oh my God, this is what we're trying to do, right? We're trying to help people cope with these unknown unknowns, these new problems that they've never seen before. They don't have like this rich, all these dashboards and all these playbooks, because that's a new thing. You've never seen it, right? Which means that you need to be able to understand and reason about the inner state of the system, no matter what state it gets into, whether or not you've ever seen it before, quickly. And observability, like, and when you translate it in software, that's what it is. It's the ability to answer any questions, understand any system state, key point, without shipping new code to handle it, right? Because that implies that you could have predicted it, you would have needed that data, right? And the whole point is, you can't predict it. And you just need to stuff a bunch of stuff in there that might someday be useful, because when you need it, the world is not going to pause while you find what you're looking for and then just ship out something to show it to you. You know, like, it's a problem. It's like precognition. You don't get to be a precog. So it's all about shipping a lot of data. So that's where observability comes from. Now, sadly, you know, and I've written a lot about the technical definition of observability as I just defined it. There are a lot of things that precede, if you accept that definition, then there are characteristics of observability tools that are different from monitoring tools, et cetera. You know, the source of truth in monitoring is the metric, right? It's a number with some tags appended. The data structure that is the source of truth in observability is the arbitrarily wide structured event that contains all of the context for this request, you know, the parameters that were passed in, anything you can see or infer about the environment, the language internals, the business logic, things like shopping cart ID, et cetera. And it's all held continuous in that one blob, which, you know, you initialize when your request enters a service, you initialize it, pre-populate it with anything, you let it execute, and then right before it's about to error or exit, you ship that off to your observability tool in that one contiguous blob. And this just opens up so many vistas. And it's interesting, if you think about it, this became a big deal around the time of microservices. Why? Because you can attach a debugger to your process, right? But then as soon as the request hops the network, you lose all that context, and you have to start again from scratch. And observability is kind of reconstituting that single process that contained all of the context that you could once step through. So I regret to say that while the rest of the industry has eagerly adopted a lot of our messaging and our words around this, they have not yet, the other people out there who have branded themselves as observability tools do not actually have some or all of the things that I think define observability. So I hope that this is a temporary state, because honestly, I don't think we need another term to mean monitoring. I would like it to mean something. But as for now, like your Datadogs, your New Relics, your blah, 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 everybody who's shipping themselves as an observability tool, in my opinion, are not.
So you've said a couple of things that I thought were really particularly, and everything you said was amazing, but I think there are a couple of keywords in there that I'd kind of like to drill in on.
Yeah.
First of all, monitoring is very reactive, right? So yes. I come from an ops state, but a long time ago in very, very traditional monitoring. So, right? Mm-hmm. So a bunch of guys sat in the data center watching these big dashboards,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Looking for some anomaly that has yeah. already happened,
yeah.
right? Looking at maybe they could predict a threshold, but usually they didn't get the alarm until the threshold was close.
Yeah, usually those just get tuned over time, right? You're never done fiddling with your thresholds.
Well, exactly, because it becomes a little bit of a moving target. But even if the threshold is threatened or yeah. breached, there's still a reaction. It's kind yeah. of like it becomes an emergency.
Yeah, and it's a very black box way of interacting with your code, right? It's like, and it comes, and it's, you know, it's rooted in the days when the devs had the team and the ops had the team, and neither would ever meet or talk to each other, right? Observability is much more about getting into the beating heart of the code and asking it to explain itself to you, right? Monitoring is heavily biased towards outages and problems and emergencies, right? Like you said, it's very reactive. Observability is not, you know, like, yes, it's when the site's down, that's what you want, but like, it's also just about understanding. You know, a lot of the things that you want to know about your code are not so much, is it a problem? Is it a bug? I need to find it. It's just like, how does this work? And I am a firm proponent of the fact that if you're not watching it in production, you don't know how your code works.
And that's interesting, particularly interesting. I said it's all interesting because it is almost establishing a relationship. So you're right about monitoring, right? When you look at monitoring, you know, it's that whole red, amber, green
yeah.
Mentality, like if everything's green, grab a cup yeah. of coffee, right? And today there's, you know, they're not sitting in the data center, but it is a different.
And I'm not trying to knock monitoring. There is a real need and place for it. And a lot of the monitoring tools, I wish they would be a little bit prouder of themselves, you know, instead of like being, we're observability tools. Like, no, you're fucking monitoring and you're good at it and we need it. It's a different paradigm. You know, you do not have to be all things for all people. I think that monitoring is somewhat more of an infrastructure paradigm, and observability is something more of a development paradigm. But there's overlap. You know, it's a data tool. It can be used. Both of these tools can be used and abused in many ways other than that which they're intended. But in terms of right tool for the job, monitoring is great for infrastructure, and observability is great for the people who are writing and shipping code every day.
That's also interesting because, you know, I see there's a codependency there, right? So yeah. monitoring can be an input to observability because, again, you're looking outside in, but at some point you're understanding the internal state. As I said, I perceive it, and please tell me if I'm not looking at it the right way, that it is a relationship. But part of that is like your heart's beating. But
yeah, it absolutely is. Like, I think that like the shipping code, as my friends over at Intercom say, you know, shipping is the heartbeat of your company. And observability is what allows you to be in this constant conversation with your users who are using that code right now.
Yeah, so let's talk about a little bit about culture, because it is a paradigm shift. I don't know that it's a leap. Hopefully,
it's evolutionary.
Sorry, yeah.
It's an evolutionary advancement.
Yeah. but hopefully, it's something that organizations, when they sort of get the fact that it's also mm-hmm. contextual, can start talking about not only the tools. You know, tools are great, but one of the things in DevOps and SRE is sometimes, you know, organizations think they can buy their way in. Like if I buy X number of tools, I get it. But there's a cultural aspect. So talk a little bit about the culture of observability.
Yeah. So I think that the right way to think about these things in terms of systems, right? And And we work and exist in the socio-technical system. And things that are part of the system are, you know, the production is part of it. The people who work on it are part of it. The tools and best practices and defaults and, you know, deploy scripts and all of those tools are also part of it. And I feel like, you know, part of the cultural shift that I think that you're like tuning into is the shift towards, you know, helping people own their own code. I believe that like a big part of every senior person's job should be paying attention to these feedback loops that exist in the system. You know, like a great example, a terrible example, choose your wording, is on call schedules. Ops has a notorious reputation for masochism. Right? Yeah. Right? Like I will own that. You know, we have not done ourselves well, which means that when we start to look at, you know, asking other engineers to be on call, for example, they rightly recoil. But the point is that like this, you know, this old-fashioned like on-call rotation where it just burns you out and you're getting woken up all the time and it's like going to war for a week. Systems don't actually have to be that bad. We should not accept that as okay. Like that is a 5-alarm fire and you need to fix it. And there's a lot of sort of learned helplessness in our industry around this, but I am telling you right now, it is not inevitable and it can be fixed. But in order to fix that, you have to hook up the loop so that the people who know how to fix it are the people who are getting the information telling them that there's something to fix, right? And the simplest way, of course, is to have an on-call rotation where the people who are writing the code are also on call for it.
Right.
I don't believe it's reasonable to expect anyone to get woken up more than 2 or 3 times a year. I think that's reasonable for everyone who doesn't have a very small child. I also don't think that anyone should have 2 sources of like middle of the night wake up calls. But I think that like for adults, if you're writing for a 24/7 available service, you should, you know, that is a reasonable expectation, I would say, is to own your code as long as it's not, because this has to be a handshake, right? Engineers agree to own their own code. Management is on the hook to make sure that they're given the time to fix it away from shipping features, right? It's management's job to make sure that it doesn't burn people out. And management needs to be watching at, you know, the rate of out of hours pages and, you know, are people, you know, all this stuff. So like the point is that the only way to make it better is to work together on this and to get more engineers, like pull them much more into the fray, because I'm too old to get woken up all the time either. I don't want to do it anymore, you know, but we can make it better. But it does mean that, you know, the person who's best equipped to fix a piece of code is always going to be the person who wrote it. And it's always going to be the best time as soon after they wrote it as possible, while it's fresh in their head, they remember what they were trying to do, right? And so like, observability fact comes into play here, because it's what I call observability-driven development. It's a play on TDD, of course, most successful software paradigm of my life. And I'm not saying you shouldn't do TDD, you should. But the point is that TDD has been so successful by abstracting away everything outside of your laptop, you know, everything interesting. They're just like, well, it's fake. We're just going to mock out the databases, mock out the network, you know. So, and it only tests pure logic, which means that it's very limited. It does not mean that your code will work. It means that your code is probably logically consistent. You don't know if it's going to work until you look at it in production. Staging, I honestly think, is more and more just a waste of time. Yeah. As we now have more and more tools for, you know, safely shipping these things in a limited way to production, in a way that doesn't impact our users, you know, using feature flags, using, you know, test users in production. You know, there's all this shit. There's lots of writing about it. The point is, there's this very vital feedback loop that everyone should be trying to keep as tight and short as possible, which is you write the code, you commit it. It, you know, you merge it to master, and at that point, hopefully, it automatically kicks off, you know, a run of the CI/CD system, outputs an artifact, gets deployed, And then you go and you look at it. And while you're writing the code, you need to be instrumenting it with you know, half an eye towards your future self. How am I going to know if this actually works in production? You know, no one should ever accept a pull request if they can't answer the question, how will I know if this is working in production, right? You should have enough telemetry that once it's out, and ideally, like the rate of errors that you catch immediately, well, if you get this like down to 15 minutes or less, then you can make it muscle memory for people. You can make it a habit. So they write, they merge, they look, and they just ask themselves, is it doing what I expected it to do? And does anything else look weird? And if you're doing that every day, you're going to have a very good sense of what normal looks like, right? And that moment right there is where you can catch 80% or more of all problems before they have a chance to go out there and wreak havoc or generate, you know, user complaints or, you know, all those things that build up over time into this hairball, this rat-infested hairball of a systems that nobody really understands, has ever understood, and yet most people are out there just shipping more code they don't understand onto that fucking hairball, and then they wonder why their pants are on fire. Like, it's crazy. You should understand the shit that you're shipping. That's my rant.
No. And I really do appreciate that, because I think that as IT evolves, you got to remember, we're still a pretty young industry, right?
Yeah.
So we're kind of like a little bit of belligerent teenagers sometimes. Yeah. And so I think that the ownership, and I think we're getting closer and closer to own your code, but also develop some of the key skills. You know, you said look. I mean, it's such a simple word, right? It's such a simple word, but it is look and see if it's working.
Yeah.
Build in the telemetry or you ship it and make it muscle memory. I mean, all of that, Charity, it's not hard.
It's not hard. In fact, it's easier. It is far easier than trying to guess if it's working based on a complex sky castle in your head that you've like drawn together trying to, you know, nobody has an accurate image of production in their head ever. Right? And if you can stop trying to rely on your imagination, if you can just look at it in a tool where you've got this shared view of the world that you and everyone else can see the same goddamn thing and it's updated, you know, in real time, you can move so much more quickly and with so much more confidence.
And so much less, yes, you're right, confidence. But also the systems are not so complex because of the fact that we can look. So we have very, very complex environments, but it feels like the evolution also is trying to make it easier to look. And instead of write it, ship it, move on to the next, right? There's an interim step there. So I'm excited about it. I wish we could talk about it forever, but we are going to get a chance to hear more from you in a few weeks, because on August 20th, DevOps Institute is doing a skill update all about observability.
And I'm going to be doing my talk on observability-driven development.
Yeah, and I'm so excited about it. Honeycomb is going to be a sponsor, so I'm particularly excited about that. Our chat lounge, I think a lot of the people that are going to attend, and we've seen really healthy registrations, are people that are really wanting to learn. They're curious.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, listening to you speak about this, Charity, you know, the theme that seems to come through is curiosity. Be curious.
Yes.
Be curious.
The tools that we have had have not rewarded curiosity. Like, I think I have seen so many times, like, an engineer goes on call for the first time and they look at the graphs and there's a big scary error and they're like, what's that? And they're curious, right? And the people around them, they're just like, ugh, happens all the time, nobody knows what. And they kill that curiosity. And the reason they do it is because they themselves have lost days, if not weeks, like going on snipe hunts, just trying to understand these and they're trying to save you from it, right? But over time, that kills you, right? And if we can just find ways to reward that curiosity and make it so that you can answer those and like in a short amount of time, like, what is that? Oh, that's what it is, right? Like, we just become so much more powerful engineers.
Good. Yeah, I absolutely agree with you. I think we've beaten it out, right?
We have.
Out of the past.
But you know what? We all became engineers because we're curious people. And I believe that if we start rewarding that curiosity and you start hooking your brain up to those dopamine drips of, I figured it out, I fixed it, I solved it, it grows back.
Yeah, I am really excited. And I'm particularly excited to kind of check in the engagement, because I said, I don't think you've been to a Skillet Day yet, but that chat lounge really lights up. And so I'm excited about it. Anyhow, thank you for spending some time with
me. Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you, Jane.
I appreciate it. For those of you who are listening, as I was inferring, on August 20th, DevOps Institute is hosting the August Skill Up Day exclusively about observability, and Charity's going to be sharing her knowledge, hopefully visiting us in the speakers chat lounge, and the opportunity to really gain a lot more knowledge about this very...
I love questions, so bring your questions.
And I'm telling you, I think you're really going to enjoy this. Even it's virtual, there's a lot of engagement going on. So go up to the DevOps Institute website. You'll see skill updates, register for observability. And Charity, we're going to see you in August. We're going to quote unquote see you on August 20th.
Yeah, I know.
Anyhow, thanks again.
Stay well. Thanks, Jane.
And for everyone else, really, you've been listening to another episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. I'm here with Charity Majors of Honeycomb.io. See you all on August 20th. Stay safe.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Humans of DevOps podcast. Don't forget to join our global community to get access to even more great resources like this. Until next time, remember, you are part of something bigger than yourself. You belong.